Hello! Welcome to It's Okay to Feel with Jennifer Unknown, a NAMI OC podcast, where we explore mental health topics to help you feel your feelings and feel a little less alone. We're so happy you're here. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to another episode of It's Okay to Feel, a podcast by NAMI OC. My name is Known Wells. I'm one of your co-hosts, and I'm here with the second co-host, Jennifer Lynn. Hello, Jennifer.
That's me. Hello. Did you forget the name of the podcast for a minute?
Just a brief pause, yeah, to remember what the name of this podcast is.
I was typing something for this podcast, for my podcast the other day, but I was looking up You, Me, Empathy. That's not mine. What is mine's name?
Rainy Day Diaries.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. It took three tries. That's how bad this is.
Well, I think we're just doing so many podcasts. It's just we're podcasts up the wazoo. Today, our interview today is with Natalie Frank, who is lovely, and she's developed and built this wonderful community around community over competition, that idea, which is very neat, and I love it. And so today, before we get to that, we're going to talk about community and discovering our communities and what community means to us. And go, Jennifer, what does community mean to you?
No, I was going to do it to you because you always do this to me. Known, what does community mean to you?
Fine, I'll start. it means everything to me, honestly, because community is about people. And I believe that we grow in connection with others, you know, meaning we need each other, right? We need each other for perspective. We need each other for change. We need each other for healing. I mean, obviously we need to do a lot of work individually, but we also need each other. Like that is the beauty of community. And socialism, really. This is a pro-socialist show. I'm joking, but also serious. When I started Yumi Empathy back in 2018, January 2018, it'll be 3 years in January, which is crazy. I started the show because I wanted to give people a safe space to show up and be who they are and to heal and to grow and to talk and to be vulnerable. And, over time, it's just kind of sort of gradually built this community of Feely Humans. And that's why I started Feely Human, to kind of continue on that theme of like, we do this together. And that's like the beauty of, I think, vulnerability and empathy. These are like tools of connection and community. And it's the best. Like I was just talking to someone yesterday about this. Like, it is truly the best. I feel so lucky that, people have come into my life and have, helped me see things from new perspectives, have just increased my knowledge and allowed me insight into my own mental health. That is the beauty of community. It's the best. Like I feel like there is, and we talked about this with Natalie, I feel like there is just so much emphasis on competition and just like fierce individualism. And I don't buy into it. I think that those tools are divisive at times, and they separate us. And I think we need less of that and more of the sort of coming together type of stuff, right?
I'm curious it's hard because I feel like that's kind of, I'm using the word hard again, hardwired into our head. Mm. I can't remember if we talked about it in the episode, but like, how do you reframe your brain work so you're not like, it's very easy, especially with social media showing you like the best of the best, like to feel envious or like you're not doing enough, which mm-hmm. strains you appreciating the community over competition aspect. So like, how would someone go about doing that?
I mean, I think it's very human to like compare and contrast. Like I do think, yeah, you're right. I think maybe there's like evolutionary basis to like that piece of it, or at least the competition piece of it. And I think a little bit of that is fine. And by that, I mean, I think that, I think it's just like a simple tweak in our mindset. It's like, on one hand, it's looking at, you know, someone on social media who's doing maybe similar things, and like, you know, the unhealthy piece of it is like, God, like, why are they so successful? Or why are, you know, why am I not doing this or whatever? Like, that's the unhealthy piece of it. The maybe like more productive piece is like being inspired by that, right? Is like, you can still have that, like, maybe like, maybe it's not compare, maybe that's not the right word, but you're still like, you look at it as a means to like be inspired, right? It's like, ah, like what a beautiful thing that is, that they're building this community, that they're successful. I want to get to that. That like that's something to aspire to. So it's just like a tweak in mindset.
I will tell you how my tweakage goes.
Your tweakage.
I don't know if it was like, and I don't like, it's not like I'm simmering in these, you know, like, I think it gets to the healthy piece when like you're just so consumed by like what you don't have or what you're not achieving.
Yes.
My brain immediately goes like, oh, you're trying to do this. You've been doing this for 6 years. They've been doing it for 2 years. Like, you are a failure. And then I'm like, then it kind of goes into like not celebrating your accomplishments, because like the way that society operates is like, okay, you did this, now move on.
Yeah.
I don't know. So like, I'm definitely like, the way I've personally dealt with it is like, just don't go on social media.
Yeah. I mean, I think I hear that, and I empathize with that. I think
I want to be more in your mindset.
Well, I mean, I fail a lot, you know, I get caught up in it sometimes myself too, for sure. I think, you know, I think there are like large, you know, powers at play, which is, you know, which is capitalism, which is like insecurity, which is fear, you know, all these things. But at the end of the day, like, what can we control? Like, what can we do individually, you know, to like not be consumed by these forces? You know, and I think like that is where, like, you know, on the individual side of things, like, we can make a difference for ourselves. Like, instead of you saying like, I've been doing this for 6 years, they've only been doing it for two, like, why are they more successful? Like, it's all relative, right? Like, it's taking a step back and saying like, we all have our own journeys to live. We all have our own paths to go through, right? Like, we each have traumas to unpack and things to unlearn and things to relearn, and you know, you've got a baby, you know, you've got, you know, and like, we all have our own like individual elements that like contribute, and they're all beautiful, right? Like, there's no, it's not, and I think we talked about this with Natalie, it's not a race. There's no finish line, you know, there's no boxes to check. It's just the journey, right? And that is a hard place to get to, and you know, I struggle with it at times, but when I'm in it, like, I can, when I'm truly in that space, I can, like, it's, the world looks brighter. Like, there's just so much like more, because as we talk with Natalie, it's abundance as opposed to scarcity, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, this is for all of us, as opposed to like, this is just for the people who crush it and kill it and punch people in the face along the way, right?
I think you should always talk in that voice.
Crush it and kill it and smash beer cans on my face and
little do you all know, but that's actually Noan's personality. And yeah, like, this whole thing is a persona.
That's right. Yeah.
And you practice in the mirror every day. So
I do. I do. I drive a huge truck and I punch women and I
okay, now
punch babies. No, just kidding. No, obviously I'm very, very joking. Very much joking.
I will say that, especially for the age bracket that this podcast is being broadcasted to, as I'm good at English.
words.
Words. What are those? As far as community goes, without the competition part, just the community part.
Yeah.
I think that I was saying to my husband last night that being in, there's so many negatives about like the internet, but there's so many positives. Like I've never had so many friends, like, and friends that I've like found along the way over the last like 10 or 15 years. Like, mm-hmm. and I think there's something to be said about being an adult and having like all these different friendships. Whereas like before I'd be like, mommy, I want to go hang out with that lady. Like, and you're like, no, like,
yeah.
But, I had one of those like annoying book party things the other day where like you try to get all your friends to come to sell them books, but I wrote them all like, I just have to have this party to help a friend. Like, you want to come hang out with me and eat chocolate on a Facebook group? But I thought about like the 6 or 10 people that were there. I met like one person my first day living in this town because her dog was cute. And then I met like one at a zine fest because we both like worms books, actually. And like these array of strangers, like one woman, she gets bagels from Panera for free every week and I go pick them up from her house. We don't know each other. Like, but that's like the glory of the internet and community, like just community of people, like even meeting you, like I never would have met without.
Worst day of my life.
I know. I remember the day that I got your message and I deleted it and then I felt guilty for you, so I undeleted it. No, I do remember getting your message though. I was sitting back then, the baby wasn't mobile. And so I would.
How did I reach out to you? I emailed you?
No, you messaged me on Instagram.
Oh, what did I say?
You slid into my DMs. Mm. Ooh. You were just, I don't remember. Wow, you're so much more awesome than me. I wish my podcast was as big as yours. No, I think it was just like, hey, we both have mental wellness podcasts. Let's be on each other's shows or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, he's small potatoes. He doesn't have 100,000 followers. Forget it. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I love that. And I love that you're right. Like it is, I think like that is the beauty of like community is like when we can kind of, show up in the way that feels good to us. Like it connects like it, like you know, you're showing up as yourself and your weirdness and your cracks and your birds and your cookies, you know, and people are drawn to that. Some people, weirdos specifically, you know, I'm just kidding. I'm just playing. But like, truly, like I like that. That's what drew me to you is like, you know, you're charming, you're authentic, you're trying, you know, you're being yourself. And like that authenticity is very compelling, right? And like that's what brings people together. And then you're kind of you're connecting people, right? In that way, because you're like, you know, you're trying to be yourself. And I don't know that like my day job, I wouldn't have my day job if it weren't for meeting Mindy, my friend Mindy, on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, like we met on Twitter, like 8 years ago or something. And now like,
well, tell everybody how you met your wife.
Yeah. I met my wife on Goodreads, the place where you talk and write about books, right?
Has anybody else ever met their significant other on there? I'm sure, but like,
maybe, but yeah, I mean, I think. Yeah. I mean, it's the internet specifically is great in that way. And, you know, especially now, right, we're living in a pandemic and we're not seeing each other and, you know, the internet, just like podcasts, right, can bring people together to, you know, over specific interests and likes and all that.
No,
kind of
literally
stuff.
It's a huge blessing. Like it's the only thing, like I'm like, okay, the house is even more messy and filled with dishes than it was before because we are constantly here and eating. Like I'm putting on this podcast and they're like, it's like hanging out with people. Like it's like the only people I'm hanging out with besides all my friends in the television screen.
Yeah. I remember there was I think there was a time in, and I think I still struggle with this sometimes, is like thinking about like the numbers specifically, like the number of followers, for instance, right? Like thinking about that bull honky. But what helps me, and maybe this helps you listeners, like if you're someone who's like, oh, this person has more followers than me or whatever, like it doesn't matter at the end of the day. What matters is like, are these people truly listening and connected and engaged with like your person, your heart, your, you know, the thing that you're saying, the thing that you're like you know, passionate about and putting out there. And, you know, so it's like the idea that like, oh, I have 100,000 followers, but like, you know, they're not engaged. They're not like really into it. Or I have, maybe I have 100 followers and those 100 followers are like truly engaged and connected. And like, that's what matters, is like, not the numbers. It's like, are these humans
super fans?
Super fans, right? They're like, are they connected with you? Are they like truly like part of your community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it really is, because we're kind of taught like, I mean, money is a number, but the social media is literally based on numbers. Like,
yeah.
And it's hard to separate, because part of it is like, if you are lacking in numbers, like some opportunities might not come right away, or yeah, like for a long, long time. But otherwise, like, I am so grateful for, I might not have millions or even thousands and thousands of followers, but like the people, they show up, like, and I know them by name still. Like, I know when people comment, I'm like, oh, that person has followed me forever. Like, and I follow, like, some of the people, the very first people I ever followed on Instagram, when it was just like an app where you post like photos of your feet, like in a fun filter. No, now no one is looking at me.
I mean, now I'm so curious to go back into Jennifer Lynn's first few posts and see all these feet pics. Wow.
No, legit. I will send you one later. Like, when it was, Instagram started right before I moved to New York. It was literally just like five filters. Like, my favorite one was the one that looked like a yellow Polaroid. And like, I would take pictures of my shoes like in different places all over New York. And my mom still says to this day, well, back then we didn't communicate on the phone, but I did see a lot of pictures of your feet. You would just send me pictures of your feet, so I knew you were alive. Like, are you looking up like my feet from like 20?
No. When you said feet, I was like,
not like in a creepy, like, actually AOL chats. Like, I'm showing my age, but like, there was a lot of men on there who wanted to see feet photos.
Yeah.
And I learned about all sorts of things when I was 11 that I probably shouldn't learn about.
Yeah.
Anyways, but it's amazing, because back then the app was not a magazine. The app was not about perfection. The app was literally about like sharing life in like fun, colorful ways. And I'm still friends with a lot of those people.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to like the larger powers at play, and you know, it's you're right, like there is some you know, kind of like superficial rewarding of these superficial things, you know. Mm-hmm. and it's sometimes hard not to buy into those things, but to you listeners, don't buy into them.
Buy anything ever. They're lock yourself in your house. Don't buy things.
I mean, they're meaningless. These it is. You know,
let us old fogies tell you.
Like, yes, we at the end got of the day, it. I mean, we do.
Get off my lawn. But don't care about your numbers.
Let me put back my teeth in. Sorry.
Legit, no one doesn't have any teeth ever. Like, so I'm so glad they're in.
Teeth are overrated. I mean, you gotta, if you're gonna eat, you're gonna suck a smoothie down. Okay, we're getting
totally
off track.
On topic.
But community.
Yeah, there you
is
go.
Important.
And enjoy the interview with Natalie.
Yes, let's get into the interview, because we're being silly billies. You're gonna love this interview with Natalie Frank, because she is lovely and wonderful. And
everything known isn't.
Everything I'm not.
But,
and,
if people did still think you were lovely, like, where could they find you?
Good segue. You can find me. My podcast is You Me Empathy, which comes out every Monday. You can follow me on Instagram at FeelyHuman, and the podcast is at You Me Empathy. And my mental health community, the Feely Human Collective, you can learn more about at feelyhuman.co. How about you, Jennifer?
I've sneezed.
Oh my goodness. You can find her at Sneeziest. Beezius.
You can find me at allergycentral.love.
Pizza.
Yeah. So when I'm not sneezing, you can find me at jenniferlynn.com, JENIPHERLYN. And that is my name on Twitter and Instagram. I don't go on Twitter, but on Instagram or Facebook. And I have a podcast that doesn't get released every Monday, at least not during COVID. But you can listen to all 50 of the amazing episodes that are on there for now at Rainy Day Diaries, and available on all platforms. Let me also tell you something awesome. It's Okay to Feel is for informational and educational and or entertainment purposes, because we are entertaining. It is not a suitable substitute for medical or psychiatric advice, diagnosis, or treatment, because we are ridiculous human beings. And therapy is awesome.
Therapy is awesome. It's Okay to Feel is funded by the Orange County Healthcare Agency, Behavioral Health Services, Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security, the CARES Act, which means we are doing this and supported by the county and various organizations. And we thank you and we're grateful. And let's get to the interview. I will just say, hey, remember that your feelings are valid. Your feelings are guideposts on your journey. And of course, you know this. It's always okay to feel.
And I will just say, have a nice day.
All right, welcome to It's Okay to Feel, a podcast by NAMI Orange County. My name is Noan Wells. I am one of the co-hosts of It's Okay to Feel, and I'm also here with Jennifer Lynn. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello, I'm the other co-host.
You are indeed. Thanks for being here, friend.
Of course.
And today on the show, we are chatting with someone who is doing wonderful work in the world of business and, I don't know,
life,
fighting against capitalism in ways that we can, and you know, leading with her heart. Natalie Franke. Hello, Natalie.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Happy to have you. Before we get into it, Natalie, why don't you introduce yourself and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I am an entrepreneur for over a decade. I started as a photographer of all things and started working as a photographer in high school and actually used that to, you know, kind of fund my education and continued building that business for right around 8 years before I hit my own sort of pivotal turning point in my life when, you know, a successful business was met by the isolation of entrepreneurship and the loneliness that accompanies kind of trying to build something from the ground up and feeling this highly competitive atmosphere, this dog eat dog, tear others down to succeed mentality that is just so emboldened in our small business and entrepreneurial world that I realized, you know, I couldn't continue to operate in that kind of environment. And I felt it so strongly that I started having these conversations with friends about it, talking about competition, talking about how I thought there could be a better way for us to build businesses together, and how I just saw a future where we looked at one another as humans, as a community, as you know, our greatest resources to one another, just lifting people up and really championing the success of the collective. And this movement, the community over competition movement, was born out of that. And kind of made a hard pivot about 5 years ago to building communities and, you know, launched something called the Rising Tide Society, which is a community for small business owners and creative entrepreneurs that believe in this idea of community over competition, that championing rising together and lifting all boats in the process. And that means all really looking to see how we can build a more equitable and truly, truly inclusive small business space and community. And I've been doing that now for 5 years and leading that community for 5 years. It has been just a really incredible journey. We have over 400 groups now that meet in cities all around the world, primarily in the United States and Canada. And by meeting, I should say, pre-COVID in person. You know, now in the pandemic, we are on hold with in-person meetings just to really ensure that we're keeping everybody safe and staying virtual. But we're hopeful that in the months to come, we should one day be able to bring people together in person again. But that's a little bit about me and what I do. Entrepreneur, you know, by trade and at heart, and now leading a community of entrepreneurs as my calling.
I love that so much. And I am a part of the Tampa Bay one of the Rising Tide Society. And even though I'm super introverted and I find them very overwhelming because there's like hundreds of members, like I have met a few people that have made the journey of actually participating in those meetings so much better and easier.
That's so encouraging to hear. And I'm an introvert as well. I hide well as like a perceptive extrovert. Like you'll think I'm an extrovert.
Same here.
But the recovery times post engaging with others, you know, are a little longer for me. So I hear that. And I'm glad to hear that you've been able to make relationships. Like that's the key thing I think I've taken away from this experience, being someone who, you know, I never imagined building community. This is not something I studied to do. This is not something I was trained to do. It was something I did because I felt a pain and I went out to solve it, which means I imperfectly stepped into this, you know, this role. But the biggest thing I've learned from this is that the goal of a successful community isn't for that community to become the biggest, the largest, and the most, you know, wide reaching. It's that the members themselves can make that one connection, make that one relationship, have that one conversation that impacts them. It's about the people that are a part of the community. So I'm glad to hear that you did make some of those connections and it's made the overwhelmingness of the large gatherings just a little bit more bearable, which is so important.
Agreed.
It really is wonderful. I launched a small business in May of this year. And it's been hard and it's all about the collective. It's called the Feely Human Collective. And I love, you know, what I love about what you're doing, Natalie, is, you know, when I think about mental health, right, I think about the importance of the hope and healing we get from each other, right? The empathy that comes with connecting with others, feeling like we're not alone in our depression or anxieties, right? And what a beautiful mirror that is for the work you're doing, right? You found you were in a moment of aloneness, like feeling alone and feeling like this feels antithetical to like the human spirit, right? And I just love that. I love that because it's truly, and I want to hear your just more feelings about this, because I find that our goals, our sort of hearts are meant for that connection, right? Because otherwise we're not growing, we're not learning, we're not figuring out new perspectives, we're not leaning on each other when we can be.
I just finished writing my manuscript for my first book. It's called Built to Belong, and it will hit shelves in August of 2021.
Nice.
And I'm excited about it. I've got to tell you too, you know, prior to writing this book, I had a lot of kind of experiential understandings around connection, community, belonging, as it relates to this entrepreneurial lens, right? The small business lens in particular, that's kind of my zone. But I had never spent weeks on end researching, you know, why is this the way that it is? And so this book actually gave me a chance to start doing that and to dig into some research. And I think, you know, a couple of things here that you're saying and that I've always felt that kind of came to light through writing this book. One of them being that there is this interesting dichotomy in how human beings are wired, such that we are social animals and we are built to belong, but we are also at the mercy of survival and therefore created to compete. And so this very difficult kind of co-reality that we operate in, where we know we need one another, we know we need connection, we feel it in our bones. You know, isolation is a form of torture. And not to go on a tangent about why I'm so passionate about eradicating solitary confinement in prisons, but I am, it is one of the most cruel things you can do to a human being, is to strip them of interaction, connection, and community. And there's a reason for that. We need that it's not even this kind of higher level, dare I say, fluffy thought that people often have when they hear the term community. They think soft, they think fluffy. I hear survival. I hear oxygen. I hear like it's critical to the survival. But in that same breath, being a social species, you know, hierarchy and survival and this need to live creates sort of an element as well within us and within how our hormones react in the process of competing You know, the rush of adrenaline, the higher levels of performance when we're competing against another person. You know, it's at odds. It creates this very strange at odds scenario where we need one another, but we also feel driven to compare, to compete, to contrast, which I experienced a lot in building a small business and just kind of struggling to understand that, how to operate in that space, how to operate in a space where, you know, I was a photographer and there were a handful of others in my town. And we were taught that we were competitors and therefore, you know, someone else is a threat, not a friend. Someone else is to be feared, not to be accepted and welcomed. But it went very much against how I felt like I was raised and how I felt in my bones, like I wanted to connect with these other photographers. I wanted to sit around a table and have a cup of coffee and say, how the heck are you doing this? This is hard. How are you navigating difficult experiences? How are you overcoming the loneliness of entrepreneurship? How are you navigating the stress of finances in a, you know, seasonal environment where cash comes in at one part of the year and then it doesn't? Like, how do you navigate that with the responsibility of paying your bills and, you know, starting a family or raising a family or whatever it is that we experience as humans and as business owners? And I think I realized that it was not a sustainable path to success as a human being, to only pursue the competitive aspect of life, to constantly look at others as a threat, to constantly feel like you have to measure up, or if somebody else succeeds, that you're falling short. That ideology was not sustainable, and it was actually very destructive. And so, you know, I do have a lot of feelings on this. I think as humans, we must choose to value the collective good. Dare I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Value the collective good oftentimes above our own self-interest. Like, there is a need for that. And I think, look, you know, I'm not sure when y'all will publish this podcast, but I think we're seeing that rift in our nation and in our world where we see folks that believe individual liberty is the number one most critical and important thing, even if it means not wearing a mask because I don't want to, and I don't care what anyone else thinks or how it's going to impact. Like, that's an individual liberty pursuit. That's an individualistic pursuit versus this collectivist pursuit versus this, you know, I don't want to wear a mask either, but I see that someone else is more vulnerable. I have a friend with a chronic illness. My grandfather's at greater risk. He's going through chemo and radiation right now. Like, those are types of things where I say, but it is better for others. I need to look out for others. I need to put people above myself. I need to put we before me. I need to look at a world where the needs of others are important as well, just beyond my own. And everyone's going to have a different take on this. Everyone's going to have a different perspective and view. Mine just so happens to be that the we should come before the me in business and in life, you know? And I think that oftentimes we, in even saying that, people might say like, oh, but what about our own needs? Yes. Take care of yourself first before you put the oxygen mask on somebody else. But in a higher level kind of macro component, it is critical to not negate sort of this need for community and this need for others. In our own pursuits of success, like, we can go out and achieve great things in life, in business, in our professional world, without doing so at the expense of others, without tearing others down in the pursuit of doing so. And so, that's very much, I think, just been my kind of thing that I have championed over the last 5 years and tried to kind of instill in a very competitive entrepreneurial environment.
What I love about that is, well, it's reflective of humanity, right? Of reality, but it's also, I think sometimes people get caught up in is thinking that those two points of thinking or frames of thinking are, you know, you do one and it cancels out the other, right? Like, which is just not true, right? Like, listeners, all of you, we hold so many truths at once and we can, and one doesn't cancel out each other. We're not living in this win, lose, black, white, binary world. That's just not reality of the situation. So we can think of others. We can think about how our actions impact others. That's an empathetic lens, right? And we can also have some competition in us. That's okay too, right? Like, we can do both. That's important.
Yes. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions early on as I was like stepping into this work and thinking more critically about even the phrase community over competition, the feedback I often got was, oh, well, so you don't believe in competition or you think competition is inherently bad. And the truth is, no, I don't. I don't think competition is bad. I think, like I said, I think it's very much ingrained in us in the same way that our need to belong is ingrained in us. You know, there've been studies done where they'll look at how we perform in the presence of others, and human beings perform better in the presence of others or in the presence of competition than they do alone. This has been studied at length in many different scenarios, and it always kind of comes back to this idea that when we know we're in the arena, we work a little harder, we do a little better, we further ourselves, and in the process, we actually further things for other people. Think about innovation. Think about new advancements in medicine or technology that have improved our lives. A lot of that spurred by competition and spurred by sort of this realization that others are in the arena with you. Others are trying to come up with a solution alongside you. And that brings about progress. So the idea here isn't to eliminate competition or to villainize it and say that it's bad, because it's not. It's you know, very much, again, a part of us.
Yeah.
It's more so to say, you know, strike a balance and acknowledge that we can compete. And in the process of competing, do it in a healthy way. Do it in a way that still enables us to see one another as human beings that we care about and want to see succeed and want to see do well. Again, in the same vein of, you know, in our personal lives, I have been pretty open about my kind of life process. I was diagnosed with a benign brain tumor in my early 20s. I went through brain surgery about 3 years ago this month. And I think it's 3 years ago this month. And, you know, through that had resulting infertility. And one of the most fascinating things to me in this experience of going through infertility, going through fertility treatment, is witnessing how within the infertility community, when a person is able to have success and they get that moment of finding out they or their partner is pregnant, you don't see others in that community try to tear them down. Like when they have their success moment, it's quite the opposite. It's like the loudest cheering you could possibly hear, the celebration of somebody having success in what seems like such a bleak and desolate season. And even though somebody else is winning at the very thing you're still waiting for, at the very thing that you would give up anything to have, a healthy child, right? You don't see that person's success as a threat to your own. It's so much the opposite. It's like, if he, you know, they can do it, if she can do it, if he can do it, then I have a chance too. And I think that is the mentality that I want to see more of in the world. I want that. That's really what we're striving for. It's not, you know, so much that we want, you know, everybody to not bring their A game, not show up and give it their all, not, you know, leave it all on the field, like throw your heart and soul into the arena, give it like a sports metaphor. But look, it's the same thing in business. It's the same thing in professional life. It's the same thing in personal life, like to give it your all. It's not a call to not do that. It's simply a call to do that and look to your left and look to your right and see, are there other folks that you can lift up with you, that you can, you know, amplify or elevate, that you can collaborate with, that you can support in some capacity. And I mentioned a personal anecdote there with infertility, but small business and COVID is a great example too. You know, competition really became less critical and less important during COVID. Amidst business owners, when they realized that the livelihoods collectively were on the line and that there was so much more good to be brought about by uniting, supporting one another, advocating for one another, championing, you know, causes together. I think of the PPP funding as a great example. When PPP funds ran dry on the first round of financial relief for small business, and it was acknowledged that the smallest of small business are really left out. It was like the Ruth Chris's of the world that got funding from the government. And, you know, the mom and pop shops were left with nothing because they didn't have attorneys that, you know, had paperwork ready at the drop of a hat. Like they're small businesses. You witnessed collectively, and we were a part of this at Rising Tide and at Honeybook, you know, this lobbying effort that happened. Sort of the masses came together and said, yeah, I might compete against you in the business arena, but we need to fight together if we're going to survive this. We need to come together and demand fair, which is healthy competition, is fair and equitable. So healthy competition enable us to compete in a healthy way without the big guys getting access to this financial relief in a global pandemic when we've had to protect our community by not opening, or protect our community by not working 200 person events and weddings, things like that. We're like, we're willing to do it. We're willing to sacrifice our business to protect the community in a global pandemic, but we need fair and equitable treatment from the government. And you saw the communities come together and you saw the small businesses rally. That is what community over competition is all about, right? That is where you really have to see this lived out and not just a hashtag on social media that people love to cheer about, but not act upon and engage with. And it was really encouraging, I think, this year to see that happen, to see businesses really supporting each other, people really supporting each other.
What would you say to someone who, especially like they might be isolated right now, they might be trying to run a business, they might be watching, I mean, Instagram is the best of the best of people's lives. Like they are watching other people succeed. They might feel jealous. Why is my, am I not enough? Like, I feel like everything's amplified right now, like we were talking about before. So like, what would be like the first steps to either find your community or change like the way we were raised, which is like, make money, like you first. Like, I feel like there's like so many mind shifts that have to happen.
I think, look, it starts, you know, you mentioned kind of Instagram as an example. And I think it starts in a couple of different places. Mindset's everything, period. Mindset is everything. We know everyone's nodding on this podcast because although I think folks like to criticize that concept and say, you know, but is it really? Yes, your actions arise from your mindset and how you're feeling, how you feel about others, how you feel about yourself, how you feel about the you know, combination of the two, all of that plays a role. But I want to go back to the platform and the idea of where these ideas, where this time is being, or ideas are arising, where the time is being spent, who's facilitating this information, this intel, this input that's coming into our software and hardware system here. And you mentioned Instagram. And I think, you know, for a lot of folks, where they are becoming aware of how others are doing happens online. It happens in virtual spaces. And what's important about that is that when we are on virtual platforms, we have to remember that they are operating for profit, that they are there to keep us on the platform as long as possible and to do whatever it takes to keep us consuming. And a lot of research has been done on, you know, the psychological impact of social media. There's been some contradicting research on it, but overwhelmingly you'll hear sort of a lot of folks talking about the negative implications. Well, there was one study, and I'll try to, I'll grab it from my book manuscript so you guys can add it to show notes if you have that. One study that came out that looked at this a little bit differently and that actually said, you know, is there a difference in how we use social media? Is it the platform itself that's causing these negative psychological ramifications, or is it the way we're engaging with the platform? And what they found was really fascinating. And it sort of, they looked at it from two different perspectives. They said, we either use social media to consume, and that's like this endless scrolling that I fall into the trap of all the time, consuming, 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 or we can use social media to connect, which is a very different action than consumption. Connection requires putting oneself out there. It requires active engagement, not passive consumption, right? It's a very, very, very different process. And, you know, I'll just add one little thing here too. In the community building world, we actually talk about levels of commitment, and, you know, a like is different than a comment, which is different than content creation, which is different than someone raising their hand to lead. And I can track how engaged and connected someone is by what exact actions they're taking in a community. And it's very much the same in the social media space. We either can 100% consume and never engage, never connect on social. And that's actually where they saw more negative impact. They saw people feeling worse about themselves, having negative outcomes from comparison when they're consuming, 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 which makes sense. You sort of create this mental amalgamation of all the successes of other people. No one's out there posting their failures. You're kind of creating this, I think, like to think of it as like a snowball rolling down a hill. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's like this comparison monster that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, because suddenly it's not my one neighbor next door who is crushing her life right now. It's 5,000 neighbors next door on the internet that are all crushing their life because they're posting their curated best moments. And here I am in the mess of what's real, right? That consumption aspect led to negative outcomes psychologically versus the connection aspect, which actually in some cases led to very positive outcomes. People, you know, connecting with one another, creating internet friendships. Look, internet friendships are real friendships. it's not, we don't live in a world where, you know, really, yes, I know, like, look at both of you, internet friendships and connection online is critical. It's not an imitation of the real thing. My, you know, community development manager, Kate Masters, gets all the credit for this. She has a quote that I put in my book and I hold dear because it helped to change my own perception of this. She says, you know, online community is not an imitation. It is an innovation. It enables us to be more accessible. She leads our creative and chronically ill chapter of Rising Tide. We have some extraordinary folks in there who are disabled. And this online community season of COVID has actually been very eye-opening to folks that are able-bodied or have not had to rely on virtual forms of connection and communication for community before. And I think one of the biggest lessons we've taken out of this is, you know, yes, social media can have detrimental effects where we're feeling not enough and we're feeling overwhelmed. And I think a lot of that stems from that consumption, but it can also lead to such transformational connection and community and relationships. And some folks have been way ahead of us on this than, you know, we're now kind of realizing this, I think, in the age of COVID, yes, where we feel more isolated, but also where some of us have felt more connected, have reconnected with people we've never met before, or are using this as an opportunity to, you know, really lean into digital connection, really kind of push the limits of where we thought video conferencing could take us, or, you know, just spending time with people we haven't talked to in a while, but are doing it because we're kind of cooped up. We're not able to, you know, distract ourselves with things maybe that we could in the past. We're kind of forced to confront life a little bit differently from our homes, from this season of isolation physically, but maybe not socially. And so, you know, my advice kind of begins there. Are you connecting or consuming? Are you using these platforms for this community engagement, this opportunity to really, you know, comment on what others are doing, post to cheer people on? Or are you using it just to consume what people are putting out there and feeding you? And again, with that little reminder that Silicon Valley scientists and statisticians have put a lot of work into keeping us on these platforms, have put a lot of brain power into creating addiction mechanisms that keep us hooked and putting our worth and value in vanity metrics that don't actually matter. So we've got to consciously combat that a little bit. We've got to consciously push back. And that leads me to sort of my other bit of advice here, which would be taking the time to sit down and actually write out what these narratives are that you're having. What are these thoughts that are popping into your mind? Call them out, bring them into the light. Don't let them kind of sit in the back of your mind in that darkness. And I've done this practice a lot. I take out a sheet of paper and I fold it hot dog style in the center. So like long and skinny on either side. And I draw a line down the center of that piece of paper. And on the left-hand side, I'll write out what those narratives are. I'm not enough. I'm falling behind. I'm falling short. Here's all the evidence for why, right? Like here's why I'm feeling this way. And I call it out into the light and I write it down on the left-hand side of that piece of paper. And then what I actually do is on the right-hand side, I do a little bit of, it's a very watered down version of cognitive reframing, but that's what I do is I essentially reframe that thought in a different way. So for example, you know, I'll use my infertility example as a sort of a place to start here. When a friend of mine gets pregnant 1 month after trying, and I've been at, you know, at this now for as long as I've married, 7 years of different seasons of infertility. We have one beautiful miracle and we're trying again and we've had multiple failed rounds. And, you know, I see this happen. The side of me that's insecure in pain and fearful is going to say, ugh, this is unfair. Clearly I am broken. Clearly I am flawed. Clearly I am not enough. My body is not enough. And what I need to do is take that thought, put it on the left side of my piece of paper. And then on the right side, I am going to reframe that thought in different ways that are true, right? That are based in truth. I'm going to say, you know, the fact that my friend got pregnant does not mean that I cannot. It's only evidence of the miracle of life. It should give me hope that this can be waiting for me on the other side of treatment. I also can applaud my body. My body survived brain surgery. My body has carried me through 30 years. It should be celebrated. It should be affirmed. It is not broken. It is beautiful. My body is a warrior. I am a warrior. I can get through this. Like, you know, and then we can go deeper into all these other layers of how to work through that and how maybe you need to process whatever it is that you're working through. But the reality is you fold that piece of paper. And when you're done, what I like to do is I fold it and I will actually tape it or leave it out on the side of truth. I'll know that those feelings are underneath. I'm acknowledging them. I'm not trying to hide them. Those feelings of insecurity, of fear, of jealousy, of envy, of not enoughness, they're still there. But what I'm putting on top and the part that I'm going to look at and the part that I'm going to affirm are all the points of truth that are evidence of why those insecurities, those worst case scenarios, are not my actual reality. Of why my actual reality, yes, is complex and imperfect, but still worth fighting for and beautiful, right? And affirming. And so, you know, I think sometimes that not enoughness can be all consuming and we can let it just operate in the back of our mind, but there is power in calling it out into consciousness and calling it out into the light, in writing it down if need be, and then challenging it consciously with evidence on the contrary. And I found that to be really therapeutic for me. Again, I am not a mental health professional. This is as a layperson using tactics that I've learned over the years. But it has been helpful, and I use it professionally. I use it personally. And I hope somebody out there, if this is the technique that ends up working for you, I would love to know, like, let me know. But it has been really cathartic and really supportive of helping me to move past these feelings that I think are very human and very natural.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I what a wonderful idea that is. I do a similar thing. Sometimes, you know, I forget, and sometimes I do it well. And what I find very profound about it, and a lot of what we're talking about, is this on one side, this unconscious, passive, you know, interacting with the world. And on this other side, this more active, conscious, bringing things to light, right? Like on one hand, we're letting it stew in darkness, right? Allowing all that, like, you know, I mean, I have so much self-defeating, self-limiting thought back there that's just stewing, right? And if I do let that just stew, it's just going to become part of the narrative, right? You bring it forth, you allow your eyes to see it, you allow your mind to see it, you even allow, like, maybe your friends to see it, your community to see it. It becomes more fallible to truth, right? It becomes like there's a chance it could become your reality, right? Your truth, which is beautiful. When we put stuff online, right? Authenticity is an important part of it, right? Like I have a podcast called You, Me, Empathy. Empathy is a crucial part of the work that I do. Being vulnerable is an important part of that empathy, right? And authenticity is like wrapped up in there, right? But authenticity has also become this sort of like cultish thing at times. It's like, it's almost like this faux authenticity. So how do you, as someone who, you know, has a prominent following online and is doing this work online, and we're connecting online and building communities online, how do you navigate the authenticity piece of it?
Oh, this is a hard question, and it's a good question. I love whenever someone talks about empathy, because I'm immediately transported back to learning about mirror neurons and like the science of empathy, which I won't go into, but I love it. I think, and I'm sure a lot of folks would agree, I think empathy is potentially one of the most important components of being a good person, a good leader, a good parent, a good friend. Like, empathy is critical. When we turn our eye though to this, dare I call it, like, the marketing of authenticity, the commoditization of authenticity, the leveraging of the perception of authenticity for the benefit, I think we're presented with a real challenge. The way, and also as a side note, I think even navigating authenticity is going to look different for each person in how much they're able to be authentic and still be safe.
Yep.
You know, and that's something that I've talked about at length a lot with mentors and friends of mine, whether it's physically safe, mentally safe, like, you know, the minute you do open yourself up, the vulnerability component is a great example. You know, to be vulnerable is to be open to attack. I think that might be part of the actual definition of that word. Mm-hmm. And it's been a while since I've looked it up, but I believe it's like to be open to attack, to be kind of unshielded, unguarded. And therefore, like, I know y'all are on a podcast, you can't hear me or can't see me. I'm like opening my arms up and revealing my rib cage, right? Like, yeah. Vulnerability is to be open to attack. For a lot of folks, that is actually too much of a risk to take. The minute that's brought to the internet, it could be brought to a place where a lot of harm can be done with being vulnerable. And I've seen this happen to folks that share before they're ready, that are authentic sure. before they've personally processed something, a trauma they've gone through or an experience that's unfolding. And so I like to point that out first, because I just want to acknowledge that everyone has a different level to which they can be vulnerable and has a different amount that they can share in the pursuit of vulnerability. Now, when it comes to authenticity, though, I think it really looks to me almost perhaps a little bit more like this intersection of transparency meets emotion. Like, authenticity to me is where I can be transparent. I can let you in. I can let you see behind the screen. And so that for me has been things like, you know, when we're going through fertility treatment, I'll share all of the injections on my bed. I'm like, this is what I'm doing on my Saturday night. I am organizing my injectable medications. This cost me more than my mortgage this month. Like, literally, I'll show them. I'll be like, this is transparent. Now, at this stage, it isn't very vulnerable for me. I'm very comfortable. I'm very comfortable talking about infertility. I'm very comfortable pushing stigmas around reproductive health and all of it. Like, I'm comfortable. So it's not vulnerable, but it's authentic. It's my real life. It's very transparent. So for me, that's the transparency component piece that I always check. I'm like, am I really sharing the real? So another example, Halloween, a little less intense. And we put my son in a chicken costume. I don't know why I got a chicken costume. I just thought it was cute. You know, I didn't have a lot of time. I'm a working mom. I'm like, chicken costume, great. He's going to love it. Well, he didn't love it. He cried 95% of the time wearing this chicken costume. He's 19 months old. And, you know, I took a ton of pictures of him, and I have some where he's smiling because we made him, we like tried to, you know, we
tickle,
you know,
him, shake
anything,
him.
Any, all of it. Literally all of it to get him to smile. And I got a couple. But I also have a couple where he is just the cutest little bawling toddler I've ever seen. His head's back, his mouth's open, his eyes are watering. Like, he doesn't want to be in the chicken costume. And I promise I didn't torture my child. It was a very short amount of time he was in the outfit. And I thought to myself, you know, every parent right now is posting the perfect Halloween picture. It's like, I don't even know how they all came up with these family costumes. I really don't. They must have spent hours coming up with them. I don't have time to do a family costume, but I got my kid a chicken suit. He didn't like it. So I had this opportunity here to post what everyone else is posting, the beautiful Halloween moment of my child laughing on the steps because I bribed him with, you know, Paw Patrol or something. Or I can post the actual moment of him sobbing. And I chose to post the sobbing photo. And what's so fascinating is the number of parents that DM'd me and said, thank you. That said, this is what it's like to have Halloween with a toddler. You nailed it. And I can't tell you how grateful I am, because I didn't even have time to get my child a costume this year. Money was really tight and mine didn't look as cool as everyone else's because I made it at home because of the pandemic, right? Like, these messages of like, this is real life. And I just appreciate the transparency. To me, like, it can get really complicated when we start to say, are we being authentic or are we not? Like, to what degree are you authentic? Mm-hmm. It comes down for me to the simple question of like, am I showing the real? Am I showing the transparent, or am I trying too hard to put a ribbon around it and a bow and portray it in a way that I think people are going to like more than just portraying it as how it really is? It's different from vulnerability, because there's nothing really vulnerable about posting my little son crying in a chicken suit on the internet. Unless someone was like, this is child abuse and, you know, chicken called me torture. Out for the crime. Yeah. Like, I, you know, like maybe I guess that I could open myself up to attack, but in reality, like, truthfully, what I'm trying to do and strive for there is just be real. Just be honest. Like, this is Halloween with a toddler in a busy household on a COVID evening where we're not going to go trick or treating because my family made the decision to stay home. And so, like, this is what our life really looks like right now. And invite people into that. Invite them into that space. You know, my brain surgery was a similar journey as well. Like, sharing with them the complications, the awkward reality of, you know, coming out of surgery and needing a lot of help. For a couple of weeks, being on short-term disability, what that looked like for me. I let them in, I opened up, and it wasn't always beautiful. It wasn't curated. It was messy. But to me, I think, you know, as though I could make more of an honest impact that way. And my goal is not to be popular. My goal is to be impactful in the work that I do. And that means that sometimes I'll lose a lot of followers sharing some of the stuff that I share. You know, I strive to bring people together, but there have been moments in the past year where I've had to just be myself, my honest self, and share where I'm at and what I'm feeling and thinking in a season. And again, it just, I think for me, goes back to like, am I being transparent? about what I'm walking through. And for me, authenticity has that lens, but also the emotional side. I think there's still value in emotional authenticity. I don't ever want to wait until something is so in my rearview mirror, so processed, so thought through that it becomes curated. I allow myself that little bit of grace, that messy middle area. Like right now I'm sharing about an infertility journey that I am actively walking through. I'm not sharing about it in retrospect. I'm not waiting for my happy ever after moment to say, this is what we're walking through. I would share month over month, you know, these are all the injections and this is the treatment I'm doing. And then, hey guys, it failed. And then the next month it failed again. And then the next month it failed again. And now I don't have the heart to go on. I can't keep doing treatment. I am emotionally in a place where I need to heal. So we're on pause. I share all of it. Again, I think that therein lies that hope that I have that in doing so, that one person who might not even know they're going to need infertility treatment yet, who follows me because I'm a business owner, who follows me because I am an entrepreneur, I lead a community. 2 years from now, when they're faced with something they never saw coming, is going to remember that they have a friend who's been through it, is going to feel like because a strong professional woman who is crushing it in other aspects of her life is also infertile, it eliminates shame and stigma that maybe they had held around that diagnosis or that they had thought through what they were raised with or taught about a person's worth and value. It changed that narrative. And I didn't see a lot of people doing that. You know, like I'll be really honest here. When I was told that, you know, my brain tumor probably meant I was infertile, I couldn't think of anyone who was infertile that I looked up to. I couldn't. I mean, I was raised Catholic. I was taught from a young age that my worth as a woman was to be able to procreate and raise a family. And I was being told that biologically that was going to be hard, if not potentially impossible. And so part of what I try to do, both professionally, when I talk about business and building a business and the hardships of that, and personally, when I talk about my experiences, and I just try to be honest to what I'm going through. It's going to be imperfect. I'm not always going to say the right thing. I'm not always going to have it all figured out, but with the hope that somebody else, if they are going to walk through something I've already walked through, won't feel alone and will know that it's okay to be you, period. Like there's no qualifier needed. It's okay to not be okay if you're not okay. It's okay to be okay if you are okay. It's okay to be angry if you're struggling with something or being told that you have a disease or a diagnosis or are navigating a mental illness, you know, like all of that is very human and very okay. And I think the more that we, the collective we, become comfortable with being uncomfortable, become comfortable with that transparency in the spaces where it's safe for us to be transparent and authentic, the more that we're going to pave the way to a healthier future for one another, where we can acknowledge that all of us are walking through something and that, you know, no two journeys are alike, but that there could still be solidarity, I think, in the experience of being human. Yeah.
No, that's well said. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just give you this, Natalie. I think it's very courageous. I know that's not why you're doing it, but I think it's a beautiful thing that we humans can do is to show ourselves as we are, you know, because it does impact others. It does allow others in, you know, you know, that's certainly the life that I try to live. And I know Jennifer does the same. And I know that message is going to inspire a lot of our listeners. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And you said it so well, like you could just like feel your passion like through the screen. Sorry, I had a hiccup. I get a lot of hiccups. But yeah, it was, I wish like the listeners could like see you. I mean, they could probably go online. You've done a lot of talks. Like I've seen you talk, so they could probably see you somewhere else. But right now I get to see you. Like, sorry, listeners. Like,
thank you for that, Jennifer. So Natalie, tell the listeners a little bit about the Rising Tide Society. I know you mentioned it at the top, but like, where can they learn about it? Like, where can they find, you know, if they're in, you know, Georgia or Nevada or something? How do they connect with the Rising Tide Society, et cetera?
So we have chapters almost everywhere. We have a lot of groups. We also have two non-geographic groups. So we have one group, as I mentioned, for creatives who have a chronic illness or a disability to connect with other creatives with that same life experience. We call them life experience groups, but that's one. And then our second one is for military entrepreneurs who are business owners, creatives who, you know, again, geography is not a stable thing in their life or business because they are moving and they'll live in different places. So there's solidarity in that experience. They support each other there too. But for those two groups and for all of our geographic groups based by city, all you have to do is go to honeybook.com/risingtide. Honeybook is our parent company. We were acquired and we've been growing this community as a part of the Honeybook family for a very, very long time. And so you can find our map, honeybook.com/risingtide. You can get plugged into a group completely free to attend. All of these groups are led by grassroots volunteer leaders that raise their hand and say, I want to change the way that, you know, small business, creative entrepreneurship works in my city. Let's get together. Let's facilitate these conversations. And every single month we're meeting on a different subject. So we cover all different sorts of business related topics, but also some life topics. We have had like mental health month, for example. And so we'll gather together, we'll facilitate a global conversation, but you have that local connection and that ability to meet friends in your hometown. And like Jennifer said, if you go in and you feel overwhelmed, my biggest bit of advice is to find one person, like make a goal of showing up to a meeting either virtually in this season or in person in the months ahead if we're able to transition back to in person. But go in and, you know, get involved in the community and aim to find one person, make one connection, one friend, and then another, and then another. Don't feel overwhelmed with trying to step into the room and meet everybody all at the same time or in your first meeting. Just go in looking to make one friend, one connection, and it'll serve you well beyond Rising Tide, just in business and in life. So.
And where can the listeners connect with you online, Natalie?
The best place is probably Instagram or via email. So on Instagram, just at Natalie Frank. And Frank has an E at the end. And then on my website, nataliefrank.com, you can always shoot me an email on the contact form. And like I said a couple of times, I really would love to connect. I would love to support you in any way that I can in life, in business. That's my heart. My goal is to have an impact. So if there is ever anything that you need, just reach out. You can shoot me a DM or slide into the inbox.
Lovely.
I'd love to ask one more question. Sorry. I know we have like a few more minutes, but whenever I talk to someone who their main mission is community, especially as a potential introvert, I'd love for like to hear what your self-care is after that. Cause I feel like it takes a lot of energy beyond being whatever else you are in your case, like a wife, a mom. So
Yeah, so for me, this has changed over the years. It's been different in different seasons. You know, for me, it really looks like blocking off time, like actually putting blocks into my calendar. So if I know I have, we call them Tuesdays together meetups. So if I have a Tuesdays together on a Tuesday, you're going to notice I don't have meetings on Wednesday. It's a lot of, you know, we can call it self-care, but in a professional sense, I also carve it out. Like I don't schedule a lot of intensive meetings the day after in-person events. But it just depends on the season. Some seasons it's Netflix by myself, just relaxing after an event. Other times it is working out, moving my body. It just really depends on where I am. But, for me, it just is a retreat, like a personal retreat in my own way. Sometimes doodling, journaling. Again, it's just each season's been very different. In this COVID season, it's been, less in-person events, but I can get zoomed out of Zoom meetings too. You know, don't believe that just because you're not face-to-face, you can't experience that exhaustion of meetings back to back to back, online. And so for me, it's been getting on my Peloton and just, I call it like laying it all on the bike, just like kind of giving myself time to move my body and doing it for me.
Awesome. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for being a part of It's Okay to Feel.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you loved the episode, we would love for you to subscribe and leave us a review. For more information or just to say hello, head over to Instagram at @Nami_OC, @NAMI_OC, or say hi to Known at @YouMeEmpathy, or me, Jennifer, at @JenniferLynn, JenniperLynn. Thanks. Have a beautiful day.